This is A Drink with a Friend. I'm Tish Oxenreiter.
And I'm Seth Haynes.
All right, Seth, so we're going to be talking about the idea of legacy and vocation and work. But before we get into it, tell me what you're drinking.
So, you know, I'm really fond of Onyx coffee. We've talked about this once or 70 times. But, you know, the thing about Onyx coffee, and I love the owners. They're amazing people. They're doing amazing things for our community. But the thing is that if I drank it for every cup of coffee, I would go just flat busted. So I can't do that. I can't just drink Onyx as much as I would like. So today I have opted instead for a delightfully proletariat roast, I'll put it that way, from Aldi supermarket.
Perfect.
It's their donut blend.
Nice.
That should tell you how blue collar I'm rolling today.
I love it.
Yeah.
That's so good. Yeah. We have this phrase that we've had since our trip around the world, which is when everything's awesome, nothing's awesome. And so that speaks into that idea, I think. Like if you drink the good stuff too much, you lose the taste for it, which sounds so snobby. And I don't mean it in such a bougie way. I mean, like, it's not necessary all the time. And so that when you have it, it's great.
Yeah. And you lose that sort of treat mystique to it, you know?
Yep.
Anyway, that's what I'm drinking today. What are you drinking today?
I'm drinking actually kind of a similar type of coffee. It's just a Honduras blend from the grocery store, H-E-B, because slim pickings, man. We don't have a lot in our grocery stores right now. After snowpocalypse last week, we get what we get. We don't throw a fit. So,
That's great. I feel like we should reach out to H-E-B and maybe consider a sponsorship because you are an H-E-B apologist.
I was actually about to say the same thing with you with Onyx. We could do both. Mm-hmm. We could have both. So what I did do, though, is because today's high is literally 70 degrees, I put some ice cubes in it. So it's iced coffee. And I put a splash of Kahlua because we survived last week.
Yeah, you made it. Congratulations.
So I'm drinking Kahlua and coffee over ice cubes on this weekday afternoon because
I guess we should say that if you're listening to this in the morning, it's not quite so early as you think. No. Tish doesn't have a morning drinking problem.
I don't. This is near the end of my workday. In fact, when we're done here, I'm going to go get dinner on the table. So that's right.
Love it.
So, speaking of ending work, I love this topic that we want to talk about today, this idea of vocation and what it is we do and why what it is we do matters. And I also like the idea, because I think a lot of our listeners can resonate with the idea of just like, what is work even, you know, because we all do it. Some of us get paid to do it. Some of us don't.
Yeah.
And yet, regardless, it is at minimum 8 hours of our days. For many of us, it's like nearly all our waking days, if not all our waking days, you know, if you are a parent to babies or something of that effect. So work is a big deal for all of us. And we all want that sense of meaning, and yet it's really hard to find. So tell me a little bit, Seth, why this idea even strikes a chord with you.
Well, I have worn several hats in my working career. I've been everything from a computer salesperson at Office Depot in my pre-law school years.
I didn't know that.
Yep. You learn something new every day, don't you? Once knew how to build a computer from the ground up.
That's insane. Okay.
That should tell you something.
Not to rabbit trail. Have you seen Chuck, that series from like 10 years ago?
I have not.
Oh, okay. So I was curious if you were part of that nerd herd type of group, but either way, that's an aside.
That was not me. I was not a computer builder because I was a nerd. I was a computer builder because I was newly married and had to put food on the table.
Right.
Which at that time was like Tuna Mac because that's what we could afford.
As one does.
Yep. Yeah. And donut shop coffee. But anyway, so I've done that. I went to law school. I've been an attorney, a practicing attorney since 2004. So what is that? 16 years now. 16 years. Crazy. And I also, I help edit people's manuscripts. I help people write manuscripts. I write my own work. So I kind of have a jack of all trades sort of, career where I'm essentially telling stories for a living. And And as I was thinking about that, you know, sometimes that is intensely boring. Can I say that? It feels so meaningless. You know, I mean, there are times when you're just, you know, churning out the paperwork, really to make the dollar, to provide for your family or whatever. And there's that sort of mind-numbing quality to the work. There are times when it's intensely interesting. There are times, if I'm being honest, where I'm working on a manuscript for someone, and I don't believe them. And and so, you know, in those situations, I find myself thinking, like, does this work matter? Is this work actually doing more harm than good? And so over the last really 6 months, but then particularly over the last 6 days, I've been really thinking a lot about what does it mean to do good sacramental work? You know, the theme on this podcast is we keep talking about sacramentality, about finding God in all things. And if we're going to do work 8 hours a day, it seems to me that we should be looking for God in the very place we work, which means we should be looking for meaningful work, which also means that if our work is mind-numbing, we should be looking for the meaning in that mind-numbing work. And so I just kind of raised this with you this week, and you said, hey, yeah, let's talk about it, because my understanding is that you've actually thought about this a lot, a lot more than I have.
I've thought about it a lot. Doesn't mean I have come to any, you know, conclusions or epiphanies that are brilliant that no one else has ever thought of, but I definitely have thought about this a lot. You know, not too long ago, I went through coach training because I was thinking I would get into coaching. I don't necessarily sense that direction anymore, but that doesn't mean I don't still love the thought of helping people figure out what they're good at and what's meant for them and how to basically make choices. I just love that concept. So I think about it a lot. Doesn't mean I know what I'm talking about. You know, I think this is such an interesting topic, because there was a study done, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago by Gallup, you know, which is a secular organization. So they weren't necessarily tying in the sacramentality between work and meaning per se, you know, why we exist here on earth. And yet they found that of all the domains of life, and they named five, and I won't get into them now, but the number one domain that determines somebody's ability to thrive besides just survive, like we talked about last week, is their work. Meaning it was above family, relationships, even physical health. It was the idea of meaningful work is the number one cause of overall feeling like, you know, you exist for a reason. And I just thought that was so interesting that matters that much to us, you know, and that to me tells us a little bit about our humanity and how we were made to begin with. And, yeah, you know, not to get all super religious here, but when we read the ancient text of the Old Testament, we see that the Hebrews explained the idea of the fall of humanity at the Garden of Eden, and before the quote fall happened, Adam and Eve worked. Like, work existed before the idea of sin and evil. And so that should tell us that somehow work isn't evil. And so work is good, and we're made for work. And we're probably, you know, if you are like-minded and you believe that there is more to this particular life, and we will be surprised by what we see when we pass on, there will very likely be work. Because if there was work in the garden, there's probably work in paradise. Just a thought. And so what does that mean about work? Does that mean that it is all drudgery or all a curse or all shackles? Perhaps in this life, perhaps in the way we do it, perhaps in our brokenness, but maybe not in our core, like, humanity, the core of how we're made. And I just find that fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one of the indicators for me that work shouldn't be all drudgery, that it's not, you know, some product of evil or brokenness or whatever, is that, you know, in your time off, what do you do? So many people in their time off still work and enjoy it. I have a friend, a very dear friend. His name is Nicholas. And Nicholas is absolutely eaten up with his yard. He loves his yard. He loves his grass. I've actually never seen somebody so committed to their grass. I think it's like, if you were to order the commitments in his life, it would be like his religious fervor, his wife, his kids, and then his grass. Like it's that serious. He has in fact created a spreadsheet to help him understand when to fertilize and aerate and do all this crazy stuff to his grass. And I wow. guarantee that spreadsheet took him hours to make. Uh-huh. And then the amount of work that he puts on his grass throughout the year takes hours too. And that's work. But if you ask him about it, he beams. He's smiling all the time. So there's this sense in which like he's doing this very beautiful creative thing. And he actually says like, this is part of my tending to the garden, tending to nature. And so for me, this is actually like restorative tending to co-creating work. And it gives me a whole lot of life. Now his 9 to 5 is great. He likes it too. But you know, that there is amount of paper pushing. There is an amount of, you know, just mundane administrative things that happen there. But when you get him talking about the work he does on his lawn, I mean, he never raises the mundane. He never raises the administrative task. And I think we could all find some area in life where that is true for us. I know it's true for me. This weekend, I know you know this, Amber and I got away for a little bit. And in the morning, Sunday morning, super early, I was working on a writing project that I've been working on for a really long time. And she said, do you ever stop working? And she kind of started laughing. And I said, oh, this doesn't actually feel like work. This actually brings me life.
Yeah.
Now, the truth is, it is work. But it brought me life. And I wasn't considering it and thinking of it as work because there's something that was transcendent. To me at least, in the project, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's one of the indications of what you're talking about is like, we all have areas, things we do that others would look at and say, oh, that's work. Why are you doing that? But they bring us life and bring us joy.
Yeah. And for some people that is spreadsheets, you know, and that's a type of, spreadsheets about grass.
Yes.
And I don't say that in a, jeering way. I say that in a delightful, that is impressive kind of way, because that's not how I made. And yet I'm glad there are people like him, you know? Yes. I like the thought, and I think this is so important in our Western postmodern world. I like the thought of separating work from money, like the idea of work from where we get a paycheck. And I think that is so important because for a lot of us, you know, a lot of people listening, perhaps they are part of a family where there's one income earner. That doesn't mean that the non-income earner doesn't work. I mean, we all know that. And yet it's easy to equate work with paycheck. And so it starts feeling like, do I even work at all? I also think there's a lot of us who have 9 to 5s that we perhaps don't love or feel, you know, feels like some form of paper pushing. And yet, it's not like we can just stop doing it for, you know, whatever it is we love doing, oil painting, because we've got kids,
right?
And responsibilities. And so work doesn't equal paycheck. And I think that's really important for us to remember when we think about what is it we do and what is it, you know, how do we find meaning in our lives and in our day to day, really?
Yeah. Now, a lot of people might say, you know, this is a really easy topic for you to talk about, Tish, because you are a writer and a right. podcaster. And boy, who wouldn't want to be a writer and a podcaster? So here's my question for you. Just because you have your quote unquote dream job, does that mean that you don't struggle with this idea that your work matters from time to time?
I struggle with it daily. I struggle with it hourly. And I think the reason is because it is work. Like, it's not easy. And I know that's such a duh thing. I don't think anybody thinks writing a book is easy, but I think we still have this idea of if it is your dream job, like whatever it is you're made to do, then it doesn't feel like work. What is that saying that you hear sometimes?
Yes.
Like,
yeah. If you have your dream job, you'll never work a day in your life. Or if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life.
Oh my gosh. I don't know if Kyle has the beeping sound effect, but that is such bull crap.
Right. right. He should use it.
Yeah, he should. It is not true. There are so many parts of my work that I don't like. Here's the weird thing. I love writing and I hate writing. And I feel like most writers I know say that.
Yeah.
I love teaching and I hate teaching. I love parenting and I hate parenting, man.
Yeah,
I
mean, right.
And so, and the reason is because we live in a broken world where work is hard. The work is in some ways cursed, and the work is meaningful and given to us to do, and we would be lost without it, and we would not find meaning on earth without it. So it's both and, you know, yeah. I mean, there is a reason the richest people in the world still work.
Yeah.
You know, if it was all about the money, Elon Musk would be, I don't know, doing whatever it is when one is literally the richest person on the planet. Yeah. Instead, he is constantly building new stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So it's not about the money. And so for people that think, you know, she has her dream job, of course she can talk about vocation like it's no big deal. I still struggle with it. And I have to reconcile a lot of the work with the meaning part of it because of perhaps it meaning something different than it did even 20 years ago. What does it mean to be a writer in today's landscape? What does it mean to be a teacher or a podcaster, which of course didn't exist 20 years ago, but you know,
yeah.
there are ramifications that we are all constantly dealing with and trying to figure out. And so I feel way more like everybody else than people probably guess. And probably you do too, even as, you know, a lawyer and as a writer, you know, that has a lot of just paper pushing to do. And, you know, Kyle, and we talked about this, both of our spouses feel this way, and they have wildly different vocations. They struggle with what's the meaning in their work as well. So it's a part of the human condition.
Yeah, and I think that there's a lot of power, and I mean, we all know this. There's a lot of power in the Me Too statements, you know, but just saying, hey, just because I have the job that you might want, or because you have the job that I might want, it doesn't mean that it's all roses and daisies. Like, work is hard and we have to struggle to make meaning from our work. And, you know, even when I think about, you know, people that I work with and that I coach and on the writing front, you know, the work there isn't always the sexiest work. It's not always my favorite work, but there's something really holy about the connection with the people, you know? And that's a way that I can make meaning. I can look across the table at the person and say, okay, you've been put in my path for today. And so I am going to serve you as if, I would serve the divine, you mm-hmm. know? Or when I've got my lawyer hat on, if I'm dealing with a client who's going through a stressful situation, it can be really easy to take that stress on and to say, oh, this is terrible and life is miserable and oh, this all sucks. And sometimes it does. Sometimes it's really hard. But there's an opportunity there to make meaning by saying, you know, I see you across the table, you're going through a hard time, and I'm going to serve you as I would serve the divine. And I think that is the key to finding meaning in really difficult work. I mean, you earlier talked about the creation story and about Adam and Eve, and Adam and Eve, you know, Adam, as he was walking through the garden, was tasked with naming animals, right? And so he was naming the animals and doing the work of cultivating the garden and doing these things because God told him to. So it was as if he was serving God. And I think for me, that's where the core of the matter really comes down to. No matter what we do, are we doing it as if we're serving God? And again, not to bang the Ignatian drum again, but it goes back to the principle and foundation of St. Ignatius of Loyola, who said, yeah, you know, that we have been created to love, serve, and reverence God, and that we're to use all things to love, serve, and reverence Him. And that would include work.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And I think it really gets down to that word that you keep saying that I think is at the crux of this, is matter, that my work matters or meaning, it has meaning. I think we have to really ask ourselves, well, what do we even mean by that? You know, so when we say, I wish my work mattered, or I wish there was some meaning to my daily 9-to-5, well, what do you mean by that? And I think that's maybe where people get stuck, because we picture this idea of meaning looking like, you know, going to places that are really needing something and meeting that need in a real tangible way,
yeah,
or curing cancer, or, you know, these huge, you know, all caps, needs, when for most of us, the vast majority of us, we are staying within our, you know, what, 10-mile radius?
Yeah.
And the needs involve putting spaghetti on the table at night. Yeah. And so it starts feeling like, wait, is this what we mean by meaning? Is this what we mean by mattering? And so I think it's essential to stop and ask that question. And so, not again to bring it back to the monks, but let's do it. Saint Benedict's rule of life, I think, matters so much. The idea of creating a rule of life, and honestly, tying it with Saint Ignatius's idea of contemplation and going through your life and examining how God uses you in the here and now to come up with your rule of life, so that these things do matter. You know, this is why I ultimately create one and I revisit it every year or twice a year.
Yeah.
So that kind of stuff matters.
Yeah. And I think to go to even be a little bit more explicit, I think if there's one thing that I would hope that this show would be known for, it's for saying the things that nobody really wants to say, but we're just going to, by God, say them anyway.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that really trips us up in the meaning, making meaning conversation, particularly with work, is damned social media.
Yeah.
It makes us feel like if we're not seen, if we're not recognized, if we're not retweeted, if we're not the great big personality, if our Instagram account doesn't blow up, if we're not an influencer, that somehow we matter less than the great big, insert the name of any influencer in any industry who is, really shaking it up, making a name for themselves. And I think really what I sense lately, and by lately, I mean in the last 5 years, is that the work that is described as meaningful, or that people attribute meaning to, is the work of the celebrity. And that is just not true. It is not true that in order for your, habit coaching, to be recognized as meaningful, that you have to have as many followers as, somebody who's in that space and just absolutely killing it. It does not mean that if you're a local CrossFit coach, that you have to be as popular as, CrossFit, Boston or whatever, whatever the big box is up there. Like, it doesn't mean that if you're an attorney, to have your work matter, that you have to be as influential as the attorney that finds themselves on, CNN as a talking head. Like, celebrity does not equal meaning. And I think when we equate those things, oftentimes we're doing it out of a self-importance and ego. And it's actually the opposite of asking ourselves, does our work love, serve, and reverence God?
Hey guys, a quick break to give a really big thank you to our sponsor, Rothy's. They've been an amazing longtime sponsor and I really love what they're about. Rothy's makes shoes and bags that are sustainable, beautiful, stylish, eco-friendly, and all those other adjectives to basically say super durable and machine washable. I've been wearing both their Chelsea boots and their flats for a couple of years now. Both still look brand new and are as comfortable as the day when I first got them. I wore my boots today to teach my high school classes, in fact. They're easy to dress up or down, and they go with almost everything. I'm also loving Rothy's new line of lace-ups, and along with their bags, they also now have washable face masks for both adults and kids. All the fabric they use is made from recycled plastic water bottles, and yet it's super soft and amazingly comfortable, just right for a zero break-in period. So far, Rothy's has transformed over 70 million single-use plastic bottles into unique and amazing stuff. And maybe best of all, when your shoes, bags, and masks are ready for a refresh, they're fully machine washable. No more soaking and scrubbing by hand. You just toss it all in with the laundry. So check out all their evolving styles of flats, sneakers, sandals, boots, bags, and all of their colors and patterns by going to rothys.com/friend. That's rothys.com/friend. Rothys is where style and sustainability meet to create the shoes and bags you've been looking for. So one more time, that's rothys.com/friend. All right, back to our chat. It reminds me a little bit of Seth Godin, who is well known as, you know, a thinker in the marketing space. He talks about, it was a few years ago, he went to give a talk in Iceland, and he was initially disappointed by the size of the crowd. And I don't even remember the numbers. Like, he, you know, his gut, he hated that, but yet there it was. He was disappointed until he did the math and realized it was like 0.6 of the entire population of Iceland or whatever it is, you know, 0.6%.
Yeah.
And so his point being, it all has to do with where you're meant to serve,
yeah.
You know, that is it about a sheer numerical value, or is it about, you know, reaching that which you are meant to reach?
Yeah.
And I think that's what our culture gets so wrong. And, you know, if we're going to go there, I think one step further beyond the celebrity culture is the Christian celebrity culture.
Yeah, totally.
You know, I mean, it is messed up. This idea of whoever says the wittiest thing has the prettiest little shareable quote picture on Instagram, and it drives me bonkers. And I know, you know, you like Instagram more than I do, but I really struggle with this. Perhaps this is a whole other side topic.
Yeah.
Because of that, because to me, it really feeds into it. And it's not about me and my work. I am fine with other people having bigger numbers than me. That does not matter to me one iota. It has to do with, what are we doing as a society here?
Yeah.
I don't want to be held responsible for people's screen addiction and for people's, you know, it's not only is it not good for the person to be worshipped, it's not good for us to worship other people.
Yeah.
And so I don't think it's healthy as a society that we equate more meaning, more mattering to those who say it loudest, or who say it first, or who say it prettiest. And that's what we're doing.
Yeah. And it incentivizes people too, to move into work that's not theirs.
Yeah.
It's not theirs to do. You know,
that's right.
You may not be the writer. You may not be called to be a writer. You may not be called to be a financial planner. You may not be called to be an attorney. But if you watch the people in your, you know, in the industry that you love so much, or that you want to be in Christian influencing or Christian writing is one of those spaces for sure. If you see people being loud and getting following and getting traction, and that's where you want to be, it incentivizes you to act in the same way, when maybe you're called to do a different kind of work altogether. Or maybe you're called to do the same work in a smaller way, in a much more meaningful way in your personal life. You know, maybe you're called to do a quieter kind of work. I've been reading, you know this, because I said this in the last episode, I've been reading Heather King's Shirt of Flame. And I don't remember if it was in the introduction or if it was in the first chapter, but she actually talks about her writing career. And she was describing it in really disappointing terms. Now, she had also described the fact that she had written several books. She had produced several stories for a very, very well-known NPR podcast and radio show that's amazing. She's won several awards. And as she was talking about it, she almost was saying, like, why didn't I ever get my big literary breakthrough? And as I was reading it, I was like, holy crap, I wish I could write that many books. And I wish I could be on the same podcast and those sorts of things. And what it demonstrated to me is that we all look up chain and say, man, their work really has meaning. Now, I will say, as a mature writer, she was very quick to point out that she has been called to do the thing that she's been called to do. And she's, you know, faithfully pursued that. And as a result, I love her writing. I think it's amazing. I think it's really sweet because it's not over trying, I think, as you see with a lot of writers, but I think it demonstrated to me that we all tend to look upstream and say, oh, the person that's just a little bit ahead of me, their work matters. And that creates this sort of striving, this sort of incentivization to do things that we might not otherwise do if we were just really comfortable with the fact that we are where we have been called to do the work that we have been called to do in service of the divine, in service of God, in a way that demonstrates his love to the world around us and finds him in it.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's why the word legacy matters to this conversation. The idea of what we leave behind, I think, is a better metric than what are people celebrating right now. Yeah. I think the two questions that come to mind whenever I think about my work, and I'm still debating whether this is particular to my line of work, but I think I could see this applying to other types of work too. The two are, what will people be celebrating 100 years from now?
Yeah.
And I don't mean that to say your work only matters if it will last in 100 years, because no way. My point is simply, I mean, maybe this is kind of tied into that Lent idea of memento mori, you know, we're all going to die. The things that people were talking about 100 years ago, the well-known thinkers and pop culture and, you know, music or whatever, we're not talking about anymore. So that should give us both some sobering reality and a lot of freedom, you know?
Yep.
And then two, what will my family tree look like when I'm gone? Because to me, that's that, I mean, to take a pun a step further, that's what really grounds me, this idea of a tree. In what way do I want my family tree to be better because I was a branch in it? You know, whether that looks like solid faith, whether that looks like a lover of really good stories, a lover of nature, financial literacy, a lover of the world. I don't know, whatever. It almost like doesn't matter except so long as it ties into your overall meaning for existing. I think that matters so much more than, did I get talked about today? And did I get talked about more than these other people? You know, there's even this idea of like, be a better version of yourself than you were yesterday. Yeah. And while I appreciate that to some degree, I think that can leave us exhausted because that makes us, that puts us on this hamster wheel of acting or thinking like nothing's ever good enough.
Yeah.
And that's what our culture gets wrong and leaves us exhausted and wanting more.
Which is why I think a better metric is, did I find more meaning in my life today than I did yesterday? And by meaning, I mean capital M, you know, the meaning of what it means to find God in all things, including your work. Did I find more meaning in my work today than I did yesterday? That doesn't mean, was it more fun? It doesn't mean, did it get retweeted more, if that's, you know, your endeavor. It didn't mean, did the portfolios I manage, you know, return more profits. It's, did I find God present in all things, including work, more today than I did yesterday? And if I didn't, recalibrate around the idea that there is meaning in the work that you do, no matter how big or small it is, no matter if it's, you know, changing diapers for another year. Or again, whether it's managing, you know, the largest piece of litigation in your state at any given point, like finding meaning in the work that you do, capital M meaning, has got to be the focus, not any other metric that would prop up your ego or pad your bank account, or because all of those things are ultimately at the end of the day fleeting.
Yeah. Yeah. And to bring this really practical, because I can hear some listeners thinking, you know, Seth, I totally agree with you, but what is that meaning? You know, or how do I find that meaning? It's not at all to say we have all the answers, because I am right there in the thick of trying to figure this out with everybody else. But for me, you know, this might be my writerly nature, but I also think, just, I don't know what I think until I write it. It helps me to literally legit name by writing what matters to me. So like, this morning, legit, in my journal, I asked the question, what do I really care about this week? You know, as I start a new week, what do I care about? And I made a list of things I care about: honoring God with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength, loving and serving my family well, having the mindset of Christ, to serve, not be served, and then fulfilling my commitments, writing my book, podcasting, teaching my students, keeping my house, loving my family, and then connecting with the readers and listeners I'm meant to have, who God wants me to connect with, and that's it. And then I have this document I update every class day when I'm in our school that is only for me. Nobody sees it. And I literally write at the top. I have this thing that I just work on like a catechism. What is my purpose in teaching these English classes? And my answer is to lead teenagers to truth through good and beautiful literature, to deepen their poetic knowledge, and to improve their communication skills with writing. And I have to repeat that, because if I go in and I think, okay, my goal today is to seem just a little bit cooler to these 16-year-olds, it's going to not only not work, it's going to do the opposite effect because they can smell that a mile away. But also that I don't really care about that. And I have to remember, what do I really care about? Oh, it's helped these kids read and write better. I have to remember that. And so I think, you know, if you're listening and thinking, you know, how do I do this in the middle of the day when all I've got on my agenda are diaper changing and, you know, mess cleaning, to actually legit write it down. It might help.
Yeah. Or it may also mean if you are a, you know, online influencer, stepping back and saying, what am I influencing people toward? Am I influencing people toward, you know, something that's vacuous or something that's fleeting or something that's only there for a moment? Or am I using my gifts, my calling, to influence people towards a greater meaning, a bigger meaning, whether religious or secular? It doesn't matter. But am I using what I have to really encourage people on to greater meaning? Or am I doing this to sort of assuage something or to prop something up that is, you know, mine, me, my bank account, again, my influence, my numbers, my ego, whatever the thing is. I think it's really important to ask ourselves those questions, especially in a day and age that is so connected and so metric oriented.
Yep, that's right. Yeah. And, you know, this doesn't mean everything needs to be like deep or even spirit focused. I mean, even though, you know, we kind of believe in the idea of sacramentality, that everything has that spiritual element to it. But I think it's important to remember what we're saying here is not necessarily how holy am I presenting myself or how much am I don't know. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's perfectly fine to talk about good music and something you saw on TV. 100%. Yeah. It's a matter of posture. It's a matter of why are you doing what you're doing? And I think that's what you're getting at, ultimately, this meaning.
Yeah. And I've stepped back from Twitter and Facebook, you know, this for Lent.
Yeah.
Again, not Instagram, because I love the beauty of Instagram, especially the photographers. They add so much to my life. But I've stepped back from Twitter and Facebook, and I'm asking those questions. Like, what does it mean to use those platforms in a way that is intensely personal, but also, you know, it points to deeper meaning, to bigger meaning. And I think art does point to bigger meanings. I think music and literature and our own writing, when we do it well, and the writing of other people, when they do it well, I think all of that points to bigger meanings. Sometimes I feel like a good joke, a well-placed joke, or you know, sharing your sense of humor can even point to those things. But I just want to take a break and say, you know, it is what I'm doing, is how I'm using these platforms. Is it giving folks a sense that they have to do certain things to matter, that they have to have a certain number of followers to matter, that they have to tweet in a certain way or Facebook in a certain way, or you know, pick the proper cause in order to matter? Yeah. And I see a lot of that, and I don't believe it. I just don't believe that constantly giving yourself to the churn of the metric oriented and driven society is a way to prove that your work matters.
Yeah, it's good. And it's a good reminder during Lent, you know, that you're dust and you're going to be dust again soon. And so make sure what you're doing has a point and a purpose and points to something bigger than yourself.
Yeah. So as we continue having this conversation with other people, particularly people who may not be in the same world that we are, who aren't, you know, maybe so neurotic about numbers and sales and metrics on social media, maybe we can ask them where they find meaning in their day-to-day work and how they find meaning in creating things or selling things or providing certain services, or, you know, what is it to them that drives their meaning, whether it's a secular purpose or a religious purpose or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many good people that listen to this and that we're connected with. I know you have similar experiences. The people that subscribe to my newsletter share such great insight to their just daily life that I think, all of this has nothing really to do with the fact that we are literally hosting a podcast. You know, I mean, all of this rings true for the accountant and the grocery store clerk and the stay-at-home mom and the dentist, you know? Yeah. And I want to learn from all these people. So we are definitely going to keep this conversation going. In fact, I think this might be at the crux of a lot of what we mean when we talk about beauty mattering, yeah, that, you know, we're not all Michelangelos, but the dentist can be a Michelangelo, yeah, of the teeth. That's, I don't know.
Michelangelo of the teeth.
Right. All right. So, Seth, since we'd like to talk about the things that are adding more beauty to our lives, what are you reading, watching, or listening to these days?
Well, I promised that I would report back in on Shirt of Flame. And so that's what I'm going to do today because I've been reading it. I've actually been devouring it. I'm a lot farther through a week in than I thought I would be. I'm about halfway through the book. And actually, it's really interesting because it's a book about in which Heather King is drawing sort of parallels from her own life and the life of Thérèse of Lisieux. And it's really fascinating because, again, Thérèse of Lisieux was a sister. You know, she was in a cloister, and she's the one we know. But there were so many other women in that cloister with her that you know, went about their day doing little things and praying big prayers for the community. And we don't know their names. And so again, like even on this conversation, we ascribe meaning to Thérèse of Lisieux, and for very, very good reason. I mean, just amazing, amazing saint. But that doesn't mean that the prayers and the work of the other women that she was with matter less or mean less. It's just that she's the role model. But anyway, Heather King really draws this out very, very well in the book, and it is really well done. And she kind of writes with this sort of nod to her own brokenness in ways that's really self-effacing and really authentic and genuine. Mary Carr has written an essay called, I think it's called Against Decoration. Have you read this essay?
Not at all, but I love Mary Carr.
It's a really great essay, and it's an essay about poetry and just about sort of stop trying to sound fancy in your poetry. I mean, if I'm going to put it in my Arkansas way, it's stop trying to sound fancy. And I think Mary Carr would appreciate that, being from Texas. But when I read King, that is the sense I get. Like, she is against decoration. She is doing what she has been called to do. She's doing it well. And she's against decoration in a way that is really, man, it's refreshing. So yeah, that's what I'm reading, and I am absolutely loving it.
Love it. That sounds good. I'm going to add it to my list.
Yeah, you should. PBR list. You cool. should. So nice. What are you reading or watching or listening to that is bringing more beauty to your life?
Well, it is just as deep, and it is WandaVision on Disney Plus. Yes. Have you watched it yet?
Oh my gosh. Yes.
Yeah. It's bizarre. And I leave every episode more confused than the last, except for the last one. I think I finally got some answers.
Yep.
My daughter especially is a Marvel nerd. Like, she gets into the backstories and knows the timeline and the relationships between them all.
Yes.
And so she gets all excited. And then I like at somebody saying something, then I look over and like, okay, what did I just miss? And it's just so fun. It's fun for a couple of reasons. One, it's just great art. Like, it is, yeah, I love how well they've executed the show. Yes. It is just a masterpiece to watch. Two, I love it when we can find something to watch as a family that doesn't suck and that isn't just something geared to the kids. Yeah. Like, it's for all of us and it doesn't scar anybody. Yeah. And I love that. And so I'm a big fan of WandaVision.
Yeah, I have loved it. The twist at the end was one of those moments this last week where we all just stopped and said, what?
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah, it was. I want to actually rewatch all of them just so that by the next one, I feel like my head's in a better space because I with every episode, I now want to go back and rewatch the one before it because I feel like I missed something. And so because the first, I don't know how you felt, but like the first two, I was just trying to figure out what the heck was going on.
Me
like,
too.
what is this about? And why are we watching this? And now I can't stop.
So. Yeah. And I will say my one critique of the show is that I couldn't binge watch the first four episodes, which I think would have really helped me get in a rhythm. Yeah. And I actually think that they lost viewers that way. I have friends who said I couldn't make it past the first two. And I've just said, you've got to go back and start over and just keep watching.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a little bit of a, I vacillate on that because on the one hand, I feel like that says something about our culture. Like, yes. No, you can do this. Come on. Right. Be a grown up here. This is what we used to do when we were adults. On the other hand, I mean, when we were kids, on the other hand, that's just not how the world works anymore. We're all in lockdown and we just need a good story to get lost into. And so I get that desire to just plunge in and deep dive and not come up for air for a while. So,
yeah. I like the idea. As you know, one of my favorite shows is The Expanse, and mm-hmm. they did this weekly release. I think that they released two or three episodes during week one, and then they did the weekly release. And I really like that. A lot of people bagged on it and hate it, but I really like that. It builds a sense of anticipation. It actually mm-hmm. probably smooths out their content calendar so they don't have to keep churning out crap shows. Which I appreciate. But with WandaVision, I felt like if you had given us four episodes to do that at the beginning, it might have captured people a little bit more because by episode four, you're in.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I know my mom watched the first two and she's like, what the heck is this? This is dumb.
Right.
You know, and yep. I think a lot of people felt this way. So if that's you and you gave up, go back and watch them again because you might get hooked. And I would say even if you're not a super Marvel nerd, you would get into it, though you might miss some things. And I'm grateful for Tate sitting next to me because she has to explain, well, you see, this person is this person in Captain Marvel, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So it's helpful to know that kind of stuff. So, all right. Well, it is time to wrap this up. We would love to hear from you if there's something like WandaVision or Short of Flame that is adding more beauty to your life. So leave us a short voicemail at 401-684-GOOD. And we would like to share it with the podcast. I want to start doing that more. I've got a buildup of people leaving really cool voicemails. So we're going to add more to these shows. So you can find a link to that as well as the show notes and transcripts at adrinkwithafriend.com. And as always, you can support our individual work via our newsletters. But if you want to support the show, you can do so at buymeacoffee.com/drinks. A lot of you are doing that lately, which is really great because for just a few bucks, you help keep the lights on around here. And we really appreciate that. You can find me at tishoxenwriter.com. And that's where everything is, my newsletter and all my little socials and all the things, my books. Seth, where can people find you?
I'm not quite as organized as you yet, so you can find me at sethhaines.substack.com or sethhaines.com or anywhere you use that little at sign, Seth Haines, at Seth Haines. Mostly Instagram. It's what I like the best.
Good. All right. Music for the show is by Kevin MacLeod. Editing is by Kyle Oxenreiter. And Caroline Tassell is our transcriber and assistant extraordinaire. I'm Tish, and Seth and I will be back here with you again soon. Thanks for listening.